Thank you very much for joining us today, ladies and gentlemen. We are on StashMyComics.com, podcast number 17. We are powered by Geek Energy. Before we get started, I just want to say, take a look at one of our sponsors for today's show, LongBoxGraveyard.com, where it's perpetually the 1970s and comic books all the time. Paul O'Connor, who writes the Dollar Bin, or the Dollar Box, for our blog. He also works on Longbox Graveyard. That's his section of the internet world. It's a neat place to check out. Great articles, lots of interesting stuff, and he's even got some really cool comics for sale that I personally have bought from him. Haven't been disappointed yet. But check it out, longboxgraveyard.com. With me, as always, today is Kelly. Kelly, how you doing? I know you're missing the Teen Wolf panel, but...
I am. It's really sad, but I'm okay.
Next to Kelly, we have Jason, the editor for StashMyComics.com. Jason, how you doing?
Not bad.
All right. Good to hear. And finally, we have Tom, the mastermind behind Geek Cinema, which is one of our most popular articles on StashMyComics. Tom, last time, the last Geek Cinema you put out, to the New York Times article, what was that all about?
Let's see. How did I even stumble across it? I was, I think, reading the New York Times, the review. No, you know, it is an article in the New York Times actually about the New York Mets, which none of you care about. So
does it count if I loved the Mets when I was a kid?
That does count. I'm going to take it. No problem.
Daryl's dropping.
And there was, I had a poster of him on my wall. There was a sidebar that was this thing where these, the two Times film critics were commenting on superhero movies in general. And so I clicked on it and I read it. And my response, as you could see, was positive at first and then slowly more and more negative until I realized they're both just two huge douche nozzles, which is my new favorite word, by the way.
Now, I read... when I started reading your article, I had to stop to read the New York Times article.
Yeah.
And it was just how you described it. I mean, to start, they were okay about it. And then as it, the further that they went, the more degrading they got to people like me and you and everybody else that listens to this podcast, that we wouldn't know a good movie if it slapped us in the face.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't care, like I said in the article, I don't care that they don't like superhero movies. I really don't. I don't mean that negatively either. They can like or not like whatever they want. But it's sort of the arrogance of saying, well, and to me, this is what I thought the article said. This is why you like it. You like it for the wrong reasons, and we're better than you because we don't like it.
You know, I have never been a fan of critics. I'm just putting that out there now. I 90% of the time, critics are wrong for me because critics panned Tron Legacy. I loved that movie. That was one of the best movies that I had ever seen in my life. And they said that it was a terrible movie. How can they say it's a terrible movie? It was great to me. But critics, at least, are a dying breed, and I felt that like what they were saying was kind of a fire back to kind of get people to pay attention to them again.
I don't disagree. They kind of sounded to me like, excuse me. They sound to me like dinosaurs yelling at the meteor.
Yeah. Wait, no, don't crash into us. We'll tell you why we're awesome. So how has your guys' weeks been so far? I just got back from vacation from Michigan, from a very hot, hot Michigan. But I know down south, Kelly and Jason, you guys got hit by some really nasty storms.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, I don't know how south you consider West Virginia, but yeah, we had some pretty bad storms that, you know, knocked out power for everyone. So.
South enough to where it was like bending trees down to the ground.
I mean, I guess it's south of Michigan.
Yeah.
But that covers most places, so.
Well, yeah.
We just had thunderstorms. It wasn't that bad. Like, my power didn't get knocked out, thank God.
Well, see... Like, I had seen on the weather that the heat was going to be in the 100-plus down here in Tennessee where I live. So I was very glad and anxious to get up to Michigan where it's a 20-degree temperature difference. And let me tell you, 2 days into my Michigan vacation, the temperature, the heat index, shot up to 110. I was so disappointed. I was like, oh my god, I can't escape this.
How it feels here.
Yeah, it was terrible. But
wait, is West Virginia below the Mason-Dixon line?
Yes.
Then it's south.
West Virginia is above the Mason-Dixon line, isn't that?
No.
I thought Virginia was the start of the south.
See, I thought the Mason-Dixon line was the Kentucky and Tennessee border.
No.
Listen, I'm from New York. We don't pay attention to anything past the Hudson.
That's
well, it's like saying that someone's from Buffalo, New York, and saying that they're from New York. No, you're from Buffalo.
Buffalo, that's right.
Yeah.
They're from upstate. Come on. Yeah. I have family in Buffalo. They're not going to be happy with that.
Totally different breed. Okay, we're going to take a break for a second, but when we come back, we are going to dive right into the news. Jason's got some awesome comments on Marvel now.
Do you hold up the line at the comic book shop because you're trying to find a gem mint copy of some random X-Men comic book? Well, you just might be an anal retentive nerd, but I have the cure for you. Introducing the Enemanator. It works just like an enema for your mind. Pick up a kit at your local pharmacy or go to StashMyComics.com for anonymous shipping and delivery, only $9.95. StashMyComics.com is not responsible for bodily harm or embarrassment caused by the Enemanator. Batteries sold separately. StashMyComics.com, powered by Geek Energy.
Okay, we've got one new segment today, and that's because we want to make as much room as possible for our review of the Amazing Spider-Man film. But before we get into how awesome or not awesome Andrew Garfield was, let's dive into Marvel now. Jason, I'm going to let you take this away, because you obviously are very passionate about what Marvel's doing here.
I wouldn't say I'm so much passionate about it as I think it's stupid.
With a passion.
let's explain what Marvel Now is real quick. Like what?
Okay.
What Marvel Now is I guess you could look at it as a soft reboot, but that's something that Marvel is kind of shying away from. What the? Go ahead.
Quesada said it was a reconfiguration.
Right, which is another way of saying reboot. But
it's another, yeah, exactly.
But what they're doing is they're canceling a lot of key titles. For example, Uncanny X-Men, they're dropping. They're dropping Captain America. They're dropping FF. They're dropping Fantastic Four. X-Men Legacy is ending at issue 275. And a couple of other titles are getting cut, too. All for this Marvel Now. And what they're doing is they're taking characters and they're updating them. Making them look fresh and new for today's people, the younger kids that are reading, or people that are just new into comics, or are only exposed to the cinematic universe for Marvel. But, Jason, give me your thoughts on this. What do you think about that? Is it a good idea? Is it a bad idea?
I hope someone at Marvel, when they were pitching this around, that someone asked the question, why now? They're coming off Avengers versus X-Men, which has been not just a commercial success, but from everyone I've talked to that has been reading it, they enjoy it.
Now, before you go any further, I read that copy of A versus X, number one, that you gave me. I was not impressed.
Well, that's just the fight issue. AVX versus is just for fights.
I was not impressed.
Well, it's just fights. But with this, it's just it's like they saw what DC was doing with you know their new 52.
Right.
And they kind of wanted to do it, but they didn't want to change too much. And if you can't commit the whole way, you shouldn't do it at all.
It's my feelings on this is I think that Marvel most of all has ruined the concept of a number one issue. I mean, how many times have their titles been restarted at number one. I mean, Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man twice at least, three times. Then Daredevil, how many times has that been restarted? It's on volume three now.
And then they always get back to the old number.
Yeah, so it kind of defeats the purpose of that. And it's like I was saying before we started recording, how many different universes do they need? I mean, they have the Ultimates universe, they have the 616 universe, which for anybody that doesn't know is the regular Marvel universe. They have the Marvel Age universe, which is non-canon stuff for younger people to read. And, you know, the list goes on and on. I mean, Tom and Kelly, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I mean, if they pay any attention to What If, then apparently they need an infinite number of universes to tell all the stories they want to tell. Look, I don't read weeklies. I make a big deal saying that over and over in Geek Cinema just to make sure we're clear on this. I left weeklies a couple of years ago, and I stick mostly with trades, occasional digital. I've been reading AVX, so I like the concept, and I have, like, the execution until I think the most recent issue I wasn't a huge fan of.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the I can deal with. Having one poorly written event each year. That's fine. But how come after every poorly written event, I've got to relearn how to buy comics?
No kidding.
You know, I mean, we've reached the point where, Tim, you said it best, they've completely devalued the idea of number one, where a 12-issue run of an ongoing is a long run now. You know, it's...
Right, and the creative team sticking there for that long is a great success on its own now. I mean,
yeah, and look, I know I'm old at 33, and I time moves faster when you're old. But I'm almost positive that it's been less than a year since they rebooted all the X-Men books.
Exactly, Uncanny is at issue number 20, and they're gonna stop that to restart it. With Marvel now, it's ridiculous. I think that it's totally unnecessary. Now
this is why weekly books make my brain hurt.
Now if you look at it, when Marvel came out with the Ultimates line of comic books, that was a gamble, but it paid off because Ultimate Spider-Man is a classic now. Ultimate X-Men, fantastic. The Fantastic Four, Ultimate Fantastic Four. If not for that, we wouldn't have Marvel Zombies. You know?
Well, if not for the Ultimates, we wouldn't have the Avengers films.
That's right. So it paid off. I mean, it's part of – it's ingrained in our DNA now. There's the 616 universe, and then there's the Ultimates universe.
So now, we can blame Ultimate FF for the Zombies thing?
Yes.
Yes.
Right. Kelly, you've been quiet through this. What do you think about it?
I can understand why they're doing it. I mean, like, with all the movies coming out and that have come out recently, I mean, it's good to try to get new people into the Marvel Universe with a reboot, but I don't think it's really necessary for them to have to, like, cancel a lot of, like, old favorites.
Exactly. The way that I see it is that if somebody comes into comics from the movies, the comic books are the perfect place to dive into the deeper history of the characters. I mean, after watching the Sam Raimi Spider-Man films, you know, how many people came from that to comic books and dived into it at the point that it was at, but then got into the awesome history of the past issues. I mean, there's a lot of stuff there. I know they're saying that it's taken place in the 616 universe for the Marvel now, but it just makes no sense to me. I can't wrap my brain around another restart. I mean, when DC said that they were rebooting their entire line of books, they didn't actually follow through with that because the Batman stuff was not retconned. The Green Lantern stuff was not retconned. I mean, I can go on and on about that. They changed Superman a little bit, but not a lot.
That's what I hate about the reboots, having to play that game of what counts and what doesn't count. That's why I think the Ultimate line was the best reboot that's ever kind of been done with one of the big two publishers, because they fully pressed the reset button.
They did. They took it. They, like with Spider-Man, I mean, they took him and they didn't drastically change the core of the character, but it was significantly modernized. I mean, and that made a big difference.
Can I just discuss the fallacy in them saying that they're making the Marvel now for the movie-going people that want to pick up comics? Because if you look at the images that they teased, they're changing costumes. Like, aside from changing caps to fit more like the movie and making Nick Fury Jr. like the new Nick Fury, which I have a problem with that character to begin with, but the Hulk has armor, Iron Man's suit is different, Thor looks different. So the fact that they're trying to like make it an easier transition for the movie-going audience doesn't show with what they have let us see so far.
Well, how?
Yeah, the movie-going audience, like just from what I've seen and what I've talked to people on the internet, they would much rather like start from like the older stuff and like read up to now than reading a completely new story.
Right on. I totally agree with that. I mean, I want to read about stuff that had happened in the past and not get my feet wet on something that has to do with the movies, because it was all based off of the comic books in the first place. I mean, with Iron Man 3, you know, they're doing the Extremis storyline. That was a great story. And with the Marvel Now stuff, does that even exist?
There's the thing, Marvel and DC, I shouldn't say comic companies because no one else does this, Marvel and DC need to get away from worrying about telling stories and events that explain their history and just tell good stories, for God's sakes.
That's right.
Amen.
I agree with that.
I want to say one last thing, because as a person who's a fan of Cyclops, and I know I'm...
He's like, a douche.
He is, but his character's evolved, he's better. His costume redesign is absolutely atrocious.
Which one?
The one from Marvel Now. His new costume looks like he has a helmet, and he has an X instead of a visor now, where I guess it lets the blast come through, but it crosses in front of his nose. So I don't know.
I was hoping he'd die.
Hater.
That ruins AVX.
With that, I'll say this. Jason, you're going to be writing an article about this for the blog, so anybody that's passionate about Marvel Now, you can leave your comments here on the podcast, but if I were you, I would wait for the blog article to come out so we can dive into it.
And the article is going to be called Marvel Now?
In question mark?
Question mark.
Yes.
Okay, we're going to take a break for a second, but when we come back, we're going to give you our SMC podcast review of The Amazing Spider-Man Movie. Me as the best and greatest Spider-Man fan on this panel, I haven't seen it. What? StashMyComics.com, powered by Geek Energy. Okay, pull list. No comic books today. Today it's all about The Amazing Spider-Man. Now, before we go any further, I haven't seen the movie. So, any spoilers?
That's fascinating to me. You're the biggest Spider-Man fan I know. And
I've seen it twice.
I saw it at midnight. I mean,
me too.
Tim, I don't want to spoil anything, but Spider-Man wins.
Oh, I can't go.
Tim, yeah. Yeah, I don't know if you want me to say this or not, but Uncle Ben dies.
Really? Because I heard that they didn't put that in there.
I thought you were being serious for a minute.
Okay, so the most I have seen of the movie is the 25-minute compilation of clips that guy did on the internet. So I've got a general idea of the plot and a lot of the key points. Kelly, let's start with you. What were your thoughts of The Amazing Spider-Man?
All right. I didn't think it was a perfect movie. I had some issues with it.
Okay. Well, what?
But, I mean, as overall, I thought it was good and entertaining.
Okay. What were your issues with the film? What was not cool about it?
I thought they didn't do a good job of, like, connecting all the elements that they had presented to the audience.
Okay.
A lot of things felt very, like, loosely connected to each other, and they needed to do a better job of that.
Now, the impression that I got was, and Jason, you and I had talked about this at length before, was that the motivation for the lizard was really no motivation at all. Is that the sense that you got when you watched it?
Yeah, yes. It was weird.
I understood his motivation, or I guess the motivation they said he had, right. But it was a stretch.
Okay. Well, let's dive into that. Jason, what did you think about the movie? Now I know you and Kelly have varying opinions on how the main actors did, like Garfield and Emma Stone. But, Jason, tell me what you thought about the movie.
I actually sat down and made a list of things that I liked and disliked, and I actually want to read it now.
Well, should we wait to get Tom's opinion first?
No, I want to hear the
spoiler.
Okay. No, there's no spoilers. It's mostly the look of things.
Listen, if Tim gets spoiled, it's his own fault. He's on a comic book podcast and he didn't see it yet.
Can I say that I'm spoiled already?
All right, fine.
Okay, so I like the fact that he built his own web shooters this time.
Right, that was a key selling point for me.
I did not like the fact that he didn't make the fluid for the web shooters. I like the updated look of them, but they didn't really show how they work. Like, it just looked like a wristwatch that he kind of, like,
yeah, it beeps and it flashes when he shoots, so it gives away his position.
Yeah, well, I like the younger Aunt May, because the old great-grandma Methuselah May never really sat right with me from the comics.
See, I was afraid if Sally Field was going to do a good job. Now, Sally Field is a good actress, and I loved her in Smokey and the Bandit, but... But with that being said, I was not sold 100% on her being Aunt May.
Isn't that like
I wasn't that impressed with her.
I loved her. So. Isn't that like saying Orson Welles was great in Transformers? Come on.
Yes, he was awesome as Unicron. That thing.
I'm not saying anything about Sally Field's performance. I just say I like the look of the younger Aunt May, because she... It was a total disconnect when Peter Parker's 16 and Aunt May's 162. I did not like the fact that Uncle Ben never said, "With great power comes great responsibility."
See, that's something.
They can't do that, though.
They should do that. It's ingrained in Spider-Man culture.
You know
that he never said it.
I know that he never said it. There was this scene where they talked about it, but he never said that line. I mean, it's not a big deal. I kind of wish they had said it.
In the comic book, he never said it.
Doesn't matter.
Right.
He should have said it.
People would be like, oh, they're stealing.
It kind of does matter, though, because, I mean, the whole line with great power comes great responsibility is a signature part of the Spider-Man mythos. I mean, in the films, Uncle Ben is the one that said it. You know, and in the comic books, Tom, Uncle Ben didn't say that.
No, Smile and Stan said it in the yellow boxes.
Right, but that line, that one line right there explains Spider-Man forever. I mean, like, there's no other way to explain Spider-Man other than with great power comes great responsibility. Was that line in the movie?
No.
Then that shoots it right down for me. That has to be there somewhere.
I think from a filmmaking standpoint, I don't think that they could have done that, just because people would, like, cry, be like, it's borrowing too much from the Sam Raimi films. And
well, no, it's borrowing from the comics where that line appears.
Wrong.
They paraphrased it. It was there, but
yeah, they had the scene, but
Yeah. Okay. They paraphrase it. It's the same message, but they phrase it differently.
Okay.
And Uncle Ben does say it, yeah.
All right. Let's.
I have two more things.
Okay.
I really, really like the fact that in most of Emma Stone's scene, Gwen Stacy had the black headband in, because in the comics, that's how she was always drawn. That was a nice little throwback for, you know, the fans that are in the know.
Can I just say that, in my opinion, Emma Stone is the spitting image of Gwen Stacy, or at least what she should look like on screen. I'm just putting that out there.
You can say that, sure.
Yes.
Okay, and the last thing, just about the look, or, you know, minor things, I did not like the look of the lizard. I actually got out of the film, and the people I went with, my first thought, or what I said to them when we got out was, it's nice to see Killer Croc in something.
Tom.
Yes.
What did you think? What did you think about the movie?
I thought it was as good as, if not better than, The Avengers.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah. Loved it.
Is not what I expected to hear from you, honestly.
I did not expect to love it as much as I did. I thought they got just about everything right. The tone was great. It wasn't the campy tone of the Raimi movies. It was a more intimate story than The Avengers. It was more personal than The Avengers. Okay. Andrew Garfield looks like Peter Parker, sounds like Peter Parker, moves like Peter Parker.
Emma Stone
is a fantastic actress. Uncle Ben and Aunt May were actually played by actors, thank God, so you actually care when he dies, and you really do care when he dies, and Martin Sheen is fantastic in the movie. I agree the lizard should have had the snout. I missed the snout. He did look like Killer Croc. It was a good observation, but his motivation, both as Kurt Connors and as the lizard, to me, was made crystal clear and absolutely worked.
Now, I will say this, that Andrew Garfield is a better representation of Peter Parker than Tobey Maguire was. Tobey Maguire was good in respects, but he was not what I pictured Peter Parker to look like.
Agreed.
Now, Garfield is a better representation of that, but not what I would picture. That's not to say that he's done a bad job or a good job, but from what I've seen, it looks good. Now, Emma Stone as Gwen Stacy, that, to me, they could not have done a better decision in casting than her. She's sexy, she's gorgeous, she's a great actress, and from everything that I've seen, she plays Gwen Stacy perfectly.
And look at this.
Do what, Kelly? Say that again.
I was agreeing.
Okay. Tom, go ahead.
Look at it this way. Emma Stone, better than Kirsten Dunst. Andrew Garfield, better than Tobey Maguire. Martin Sheen and Sally Fields, better than whoever those are. Rosemary Harris and Cliff something. yeah, I don't know. Reese Ifan, better. I think I mispronounced his name, but I hope he forgives me. Better than Alfred Molina or Willem Dafoe.
Ooh, wow.
Alfred Molina was Dr. Octopus. I saw him as Dr. Octopus. And Willem Dafoe, it took a minute to get it going, but once it got going, I believed he was Norman Osborn.
I like him as Norman Osborn, but the Green Goblin was a catastrophe.
The Power Ranger suit was a bad idea. I agree with that 100%. And with the new Amazing Spider-Man, is Mark Webb's vision better than Sam Raimi's, or just on a different level?
Well, to that, I want to address what Tom said. You said you liked the tone of the film. You thought it felt right.
It did.
Tonally, the movie felt wrong for me. Like, it's like they saw how good the Batman films had done, and they're like, well, these movies are dark. Let's kind of make Spider-Man dark. And that doesn't work for me because Spider-Man's not a dark character. And then it wasn't just the tone of the movie, it was the look of the movie. Like, the scenes were very dark. His costume wasn't bright in scenes. Like, to me, it should be red and blue popping. And in this, they were very subdued. And when he's trying to make the quips and the jokes, I like the fact that they injected the humor in, but that, at the time of the film, it grated for me, where he's trying to be funny and everything, and
Did it seem like it was forced humor, or?
No, it wasn't forced humor. It just, the tone of what was going on in the film at the time just contrasted heavily, at least for me, when he started to make the jokes.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Kelly, go ahead. You more? Go ahead.
Yeah, I just agree that the tone of the movie itself was not matched well with visually, like, the mise-en-scene of the movie. So
I think everyone holds the 1970s era Spider-Man as, like, the gold standard, and I get that. But if you go back and read them today, and the Sam Raimi films, to me, were kind of trying to recapture 1970s-era Spider-Man, go back and read them today, they're pretty hokey. They don't hold up really, really great. So I think this took more inspiration from, I guess, the Spider-Man I grew up with 90s Spider-Man, which is
the dark. Torment storyline.
Absolutely. And Spider-Man is, I mean, look, on the surface, he is a very funny character, and I appreciated that the quips in this were funny. But the character is just seeped in pathos, you know. That's kind of who he is. And Spider-Man for the past two decades has been pretty dark. He's been kind of
with the Civil War, with him unmasking himself, and then the repercussions of that taking place with Aunt May getting shot, and then taking the black costume back.
Even go back to the hugely popular McFarlane Spider-Man number one, which is, I mean, that first Spider, it features the Lizard, and it's a really dark story.
That's right, the Torment storyline, fantastic, and we'll get into that with Indelible Story Experiences.
I'm not saying that Spider-Man doesn't have dark stories, but at his core, he was not a dark character. Like, he had all this stuff that happened, and it was horrible stuff, but even through all that, he was still able to be upbeat, and you know, he never like succumbed to everything that was going on around him. And in this one, it felt like he was he was like Batman.
It was said best in a four-part miniseries that I read with Spider-Man and Daredevil a couple of days ago about why he does the humor that he does. There was a scene when. In this comic, that Daredevil and Spider-Man were fighting some other bad guys or whatever, and Spider-Man was cracking joke after joke after joke, and Daredevil looked at him and he said, "Spider-Man, come on, be serious." And Spider-Man took that to heart, and he looked at Daredevil and he said, "No, I can't." He said, "You have your own way of dealing with everything that we go through on a day-to-day basis and everything that you've gone through. This is how I cope. This is how I go through things. This is how I relieve my frustration. This is how I make sure that I walk away sane at the end of the day." You know, did they convey that in the films, Kelly? Did they do that?
I think they did. I thought Andrew did an amazing job.
Better than his job in The Social Network?
Oh, that's really hard to say. I love everything he does, so...
Tom, did they bring that to the screen?
I think so. You know, one of the things about Spider-Man that always – I think that more than any other hero, when Peter Parker puts that mask on, he becomes a different person.
Right.
Spider-Man is a shield for him. It's not an accident that his mask is a full mask, you know? Spider-Man is kind of a shield for him, like you said, to sort of ward off the atrocities of the world, and also – he's driven completely by personal guilt. I mean, that's the entire, as we just, you know, great power, great responsibility. He's driven by the death of his uncle that he could have stopped. It's all, he takes it all personally. You know, even more so, I think, than Batman, per se. But that humor that he uses is, it's a cover for just the horrors he's got to go through and also, a cover for the actual sort of angst that he feels. So Spider-Man can be a very angsty character. It's a tough character to write because you've got to balance the proper amount of Parker luck and the wisecracking Spider-Man. And look, when you read him in The Avengers, for example, he's like a wisecracking supporting character.
Exactly.
Because you only see that side of him.
I don't think that in the Avengers comics they use Spider-Man to the fullest potential, but that's for something else. Okay, so let's get final thoughts on this. Jason, 1 to 10, Amazing Spider-Man, did they do the job right?
Well, they did it right. I guess I don't really want to put a rating on it. I want to say if I had to put a rating, I want to say incomplete, because I want a second film to build on this one, because I think a second film will be much better.
You don't think you could give it a number rating?
Seven. I mean, it's enjoyable. It's enjoyable. If I put any lower, then it starts to get to the point where I don't enjoy. Despite what I said, I enjoyed this film, but it didn't get into the territory of being a fantastic film for me, because I just had numerous little problems, and they just right. built up. And this is a much longer conversation for a much longer podcast, but. Seven with the asterisk of
making better.
Well, with the asterisk of I want to see what more you can do.
Okay, fair enough.
So Kelly. Seven.
Yeah.
Kelly, 1 to 10, what'd you think?
Okay, despite my love of Andrew Garfield and how he can do no wrong in my eyes, just I watch films from a critical standpoint, and so I would have to, just because I had some problems with it, I'd have to give it an 8.
An 8? Okay. That's 7 and 8 are pretty respectable ratings. I mean, Mystery Men didn't get that. Mystery Men was a fantastic movie. But... Tom, 1 to 10, what did you give Spider-Man?
This one goes to 11.
Oh, Spinal Tap reference. Why does it go to 11?
You know, I'm probably not just judging it. Kelly said she's judging it very critically from a critical point of view. I'm probably judging a little bit with my heart, too. Much like you, Tim, Spider-Man, is, as I said, is my favorite hero. And I really appreciated the tone of it. I thought I appreciated the performances. I appreciated the quality of actors they brought into it. I appreciated the fight choreography. It just worked for me on so many levels that the Tobey Maguire movies didn't work for me. And the selling point for me was I did think that Spider-Man was as Spider-Man.
I want so bad to go into this movie as a fanboy. I do not want to be critical.
See, that's how I went into it. I wanted to go more as a fanboy, not so much as I'm going to watch this film critically, but as I'm sitting there and the problems are mounting for me, I had to start looking at it from a critical standpoint. And then by the end of it, I was like, yeah, I wasn't blown away by this.
Well, okay, I think it's safe to say that as an average rating from the round table of the podcast discussers, I think we can give it a solid 8.5 to 9. Tom's 11, Kelly's 8. Jason, you're... Seven.
Incomplete.
Yeah. I'm going to see this movie. I will let you guys know what I think about it next week. But before we jump to break, Jason, there's a couple podcasts that we want to give a shout-out to real quick.
There are. Check out our friends over at PanelPalsPodcast.com. It's just two cool dudes talking about comics. And they managed to score some awesome interviews with people who work in the comics industry, such as Robert Venditti from X-O Manowar, and Joe Eisma from Morning Glories. Also, keep a lookout for Leo Johnson, one of the hosts on Panel Pals, on the blog here at SMC, as he also writes reviews for us. Also, stop by WeTalkPodcast.com, where they not only talk about comics, but other topics as well. They run the gamut from wrestling to music, movies, even fantasy football. And make sure to hit up their interview section, where they have talked to guys like Mike Mignola, best known for Hellboy, and Neil Adams, best known for everything.
See, anybody who talks about wrestling has my ear as a listener. I'm a huge wrestling fan, so I'm just putting that out there. But we're going to take a break for a second. After the break, Kelly is going to take it away with some trivia.
Geek Hotline, how may I help you?
Hello. I was looking for a solution on how to better track my comic book collection. I've been using memory and pen and paper for a while, but it's not really working out well for me. What can you suggest?
That's a very good question, sir. I'll have to consult my fax machine.
I don't understand.
Excuse me, sir. I'm going to have to ask you to stay quiet while I concentrate in order to better serve you. Since you broke my concentration, I'm going to have to go over to my next machine here.
Why are you using Morse code? I think I better call back another time.
I'm afraid I'm not getting any answer to your question here. Let me just move over to this next piece of technology that I have.
Is that a foghorn? Am I hearing a foghorn?
Excuse me, sir. I'm sorry, I can't get the answer to your question at this time. But if I can ask you to hold the line, please, I will get that answer for you as quickly as possible. Thank you.
Hello? Did he just drive off? Heck with it. I'll just use stashmycomics.com.
All right, this week on Stash My Comics podcast, we have a trivia question for you. You can win 1,000 points and a digital download. Last week's winner was 2Guns365. Here are the rules. First, you must be a registered member of Stash My Comics. So if you want to answer this trivia question, go register now. Two, you must enter your answer. When you enter your answer, you must also put your username on the forums underneath your answer so we can private message you. And three, anyone that is an admin or is doing the podcast right now cannot answer this question. So sorry.
So Tom and Jason can't answer the question?
Darn.
Yeah. I don't know if they would know the answer, though. Four, the first correct answer wins. So once we have the correct answer, we'll notify you. If no winner is found before next week's podcast, the prize is forfeit, and we move on to the next week.
Okay, so what do we have up for prize this week?
1,000 points. And a digital download. I'm not sure what the comic is.
That's
Jason.
Because it's a mystery.
Oh, it's a mystery. Okay.
Yeah, you can't.
So you will not know what you're getting.
That's right. We don't want people to be swayed one way or the other to answer or to not answer. So you have to answer if you want to know what the digital download is. Okay, so Kelly, what's the trivia question?
All right, this week's question is about the lovely Andrew Garfield. So Andrew Garfield was recently in a play on Broadway. What is the name of that play? And I'll give you a hint, it is not Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark.
Wow. Tom, you being in New York, did you get a chance to see Turn Off the Dark?
Actually, you know, it's I have not. I have a lot of friends who have seen it. I have friends who have been behind the scenes on it a little bit. Everything I've read is that it was atrocious initially, and then they did massive rewrites, and it got less atrocious. But it still rakes in the money because international people, tourists, know Spider-Man, and they come and they see it. So, I mean, look, if you look on the Broadway box office percentages week to week, I don't know where it ranks right now, but I know for months, even after all the negative press, it was like 100% capacity.
Wow.
It did great box office, but it needs to make back that money, you know?
Well, if we have any SMCers in New York City that want to go and take a look at the Spider-Man Broadway musical, please take a look at it. Let us know what you think. But we're going to take a break. When we come back, we are going to hit up with our weekly distraction, what you will be talking about for the rest of the week.
Stash my comics.
Stash my comics.
Stash my comics.
Powered by Geek Energy.
Okay, we are at this week's weekly distraction. This is what you will be talking about for the rest of the week. Forget the fact that Obamacare has made it almost into full-fledged bill form without the Republicans appealing it. Forget the fact that they might take your income tax in 2 years. Forget the fact that Syria is in civil war. This week we have indelible story experiences, stories that stuck with you. Tom, this weekly distraction was your idea, and let me tell you, for the time between we talked about putting this as the weekly distraction and now, my brain has been racking on stories that have stuck with me, and I've talked to Jason about this periodically between then and now, and I came up with a list.
I'm glad you did. And I'm glad that we're talking about it, because for a second there I thought I was on the CNN podcast. I'm sure we'll switch gears a little bit. Okay, well, shall I lay out the ground rules?
Later sure, down? Absolutely. Go ahead.
So the indelible story experience is a phrase I've kind of come up with myself just to kind of describe for myself. The stories, as you say, Tim, that stick with you, that never leave. So, I mean, I'm really, really specific about it. You know, I'm really strict about what I put on my list. For example, I love Jeff Smith's Boom, right?
Okay.
But it's not on my list. You see what I mean?
Interesting. Okay.
I love Green Lantern Rebirth. It's not on my list. It's got to be more than something you love. It's got to be something that's kind of ingrained in your soul and has become part of you.
Now, does it have to be something that you enjoyed? Can it be something that you read that you felt so negatively about that it stuck with you?
Absolutely. Sure. It's a story you're never going to forget for one reason or the other.
Okay. Right on. Well, Tom, take it away. Which, out of the list of stories that you may or may not have, pick one. And we'll talk about that for a minute.
Well, look, I'll run down the list real quick, then I'll pick one to talk about. So I only have five on my list.
Okay.
Mine's a very short list. So I grew up on reading over and over the original 14 Wizard of Oz novels by L. Frank Baum.
Wow.
So that's first on the list. Oh, I would read 1 to 14, then I would start back at 1 again.
Okay, right on.
Then next, I would probably have to put the Star Wars trilogy.
Uh-huh. Okay. Jason, you have that on your list, don't you?
Yep.
Okay.
And then around the same time, I discovered two things. One was, we talked about last podcast, Ultimate Spider-Man,
mm-hmm.
and Harry Potter.
Okay.
Aww.
Uh-huh. And most recently, I am going to have to say, just very recently, I wrote an article on, I discovered Lost.
Lost. Yeah, you've been talking about Lost, the Geek Cinema article, which was very informative, and you've mentioned it in your New York Times rebuttal and in the, oh yeah, there's a Spider-Man movie coming out article.
Yeah, too. I did. I just keep talking about it. And so I think that the one that I would probably point to, as much as I love Ultimate Spider-Man, and I've talked a little bit about, the one that probably sticks with me the hardest here, although Wizard of Oz is so formative for me, and I love those new Marvel adaptions they're doing now, they're just gorgeous. The Harry Potter saga is just, it's almost to me the pinnacle of storytelling. It's almost absolutely flawless.
Well, I wouldn't say that.
The gift the woman has. The brilliant part of it is that you read 1 through 7, then you realize that in book 7, everything that comes to fruition in book 7, she's set up in book 1.
Now, see, when I started reading Harry Potter, I was working at a movie theater in my hometown of Big Rapids, Michigan, and I started on book 3, The Prisoner of Azkaban. My favorite book was 4, The Goblet of Fire.
That was
my favorite. I read that when Pirates of the Caribbean debuted in theaters. Mm-hmm. But the reason
book 4 works so well, and the reason it is a turning point for me in the series, because that's when it's like, this just got real.
That's when she killed somebody.
Someone dies, and that's when it really, you realize this is not just a kid's story anymore. I mean, she has two great gifts, I think, J.K. Rowling. One is she creates characters that people fall in love with. And
Ron Weasley.
And she creates...
You're in love with Ron Weasley?
He was my favorite character of the stories.
She
was the one I could relate to the most. It's a plutonic love, guys. Okay. Plutonic. I love gingers.
And she creates worlds that people want to live in. And this is the secret. People have been trying to copy Harry Potter in the young adult adventure fantasy genre since the series debuted, and it doesn't work because it wasn't about the dragons or it wasn't about the magic, it wasn't about any of that. It was about people, the kids reading it, even the adults reading it, wanted to go to Hogwarts for a year.
So how did Harry Potter stick with you so much? Is it because of what you just said, or is there something a little more than that?
I think it's the world building. I think it's the idea that each book was like a vacation from your life for a year, where you got to go to school for a year with these kids, in like the best school ever created. I mean, it hit me. I was so taken with it at the time that I kind of sat back after the whole thing was done. I said, "Well, geez, no one should bother writing anymore because the purpose has been told."
I think a memorable part was, I can't remember the teacher's name, but it was the class where they would go and look in the crystal ball and do the fortune telling.
Trelawney.
Yeah.
Trelawney.
Yeah, that was a favorite part of mine.
All right.
I do want to agree that book seven, or I guess more specifically, Snape's character arc is one of the best arcs for any character that you'll find.
Absolutely.
Because it sets up, like you said, beautifully from the first book to the last book. It's hard to describe because when you get to the last book, you're like, man, this guy's just a douche nozzle. Thanks, Tom. and then you find out everything that went, all of his intentions, and then it all makes sense, and you're like, oh,
he's not
wow.
a bad guy after.
And what's amazing what you did with Snape was that all through books one through five, you're thinking, okay, this guy has to be good. He's too much of a jerk. It's too obvious. And then in book six, like, oh, my God, he is a jerk. He killed Dumbledore. And in book seven, it's like, wait, he's not a jerk. You know, I mean, she just does a great job of faking you out, like, twice.
Wow. Well, right on. Okay, let's move on for a second. Jason. What was on your list? What were the indelible story experiences for you?
All right. Well, I'm going to take Tom's format of just listing, the few of them, and then picking one. Where the Red Fern Grows. I read that when I was 10, and it's just such a sad, sad book for a 10-year-old.
I remember reading that when I was a kid. I loved that. I had the movie, and I would watch the movie. A lot.
The next one is the original Star Wars trilogy, for all the right reasons. and then the next one is the prequel trilogy for all the wrong reasons.
Okay.
That was one that stuck with me for horrible. Just anyways, the fourth one would be Green Lantern Emerald Knights, and
okay.
that was a storyline back from the Ron Martz, Daryl Banks days, where Hal Jordan comes to the present, and that was one of the first arcs that I ever read completely of any character, and I loved, it's a story that I've read thousands of times. I mean, I just read it over and over again.
Right. That's what you told me before we started recording was that was the first full arc you had read. Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. But this is kind of a tough choice of which one to talk about. It's definitely going to be Star Wars. But
we can't do it enough justice in the few minutes that you're going to have. But go ahead.
I think there's too much bad things to talk about the prequel films, so I'm just going to stick with the original trilogy.
Yeah, let's stick with the Holy Trilogy, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, those are just... I watched them, I think, when I was about seven, mm-hmm. and I was never at the point where I bought the toys and, you know, wanted all the Star Wars stuff. I was way more into Power Rangers and Ninja Turtles at that age.
Right.
But it was one of the stories that I watched. I loved the visuals in the film more so than the story because I was... so young, and as I came back to it years later, I took a different experience from it. Like I watched them straight as just what happens, the plot. I just took that from it, and then most recently, a few years ago, when I went back and watched them all again, I took all the little subtle things that I didn't pick up when I was younger, and that's kind of what makes it interesting for me to watch them is because every time I watch them, I get different things because I'm at a different place in my life. So I get different things from the story. And
one of the most memorable scenes in cinematic history is in The Empire Strikes Back, which is in the middle of the trilogy when it's the grand battle between Luke and Vader, and that revelation is put out there. You know, that Vader is his father. Tell me that you were not floored when that came about.
Well, yeah. I don't think anybody was was, or I don't think anybody went into that and they weren't surprised.
That's right. Vader was portrayed as this hardcore, ruthless person, and then his counterbalance, which is Luke, unbeknownst to him, is his son, and then that big reveal comes out. That was such great storytelling.
I love the original trilogy to the point where I get upset at some of the things that George Lucas does and says about them.
His blatant disregard for his fans now?
I've told you this before, but where he's come out in recent years and said that Star Wars has always been the story of Darth Vader.
Right.
That rubs me the wrong way, because if you watch the first one, Vader's just a guy in a black suit who is kind of like the lackey of Grand Moff Tarkin.
Right.
Like he was not.
I find your lack in faith, or your lack of faith in the Force, disturbing.
Yeah, he was never the be all end all of the Star Wars universe.
Right.
The original trilogy is much more about Luke than it is Anakin.
It's about Luke and his journey to what the rekindling of the Jedi.
Yeah, so it's to the point now where I'm usually a very accepting person of, like, other people's opinions. But Star Wars is one of those aspects where I'll listen to your opinion,
mm-hmm.
and I'm like, okay, well, that's wrong.
I will punch you in the face.
Yeah, it's to the point now where I'll listen to someone's opinion on something, and I accept that it's their opinion. But on this, it's, well, this is my opinion, but it's right, you know?
Well, all right, we'll leave it there for just a second, Jason. Kelly, Indelible Story Experiences, what's on your list?
Hey, my five, The Social Network.
Why The Social Network? I'm not saying that in a sarcastic or negative way. I'm genuinely curious.
Good move.
We'll get to that, because that's what I'm going to talk about.
Okay, go ahead.
Supernatural, the show on CW.
Okay.
Never Let Me Go, it's a book and also a movie. It's a really sad story.
Okay.
A Separate Piece by John Knowles. Book, I don't know if you read it in school or not, but I love this book. It's my favorite book. And Peter Pan, the story of it, basically, like any adaptation of it, I probably like it except for Hook.
Hook was awesome. Come on.
I'll disagree, because I'm a really big fan of the original story, and the way they did it just doesn't make sense to me.
Kelly, this is the guy who said Tron Legacy is one of the best films he ever saw.
Hey.
That's true, and he's never seen it.
Hey, I like Tron Legacy.
So.
You're the greatest. And also, Kelly, seriously, have you ever, there's a novel by Peter David called Tigerheart.
I haven't heard of it.
It is a Peter Pan adaptation. It's brilliant.
In my defense, Tron Legacy was and is awesome, so.
Well, I'll have to watch that, and then I'll politely disagree.
There. Okay, so
Is this the same Peter David that writes comics?
That is, yeah.
Okay, all right.
All right, let's talk about The Social Network. Kelly, why did that stick with you so much?
It's just, okay, well, basically it consumes my life. So, like, I mean, like, I'm, like, in, like, the Social Network fandom, like, on Tumblr.
Oh, my
God. So, it's, like, a big deal.
Okay, well, why is that? What is it about that film or the characters, the style of acting? What was it that made it so compelling to you?
Just join Facebook, same thing.
Yeah, that's what I've been saying, but
it's the story of it is just, it's about, at the core of it, it's about how two friends can somehow miscommunicate when power and greed and ambition gets in the way, and their friendship just collapses because of it. And it's just, it's such a well-told story. It's, like, written by Aaron Sorkin. It's amazing and beautiful, and I cannot say enough good things about it.
Now,
and directed by David Fincher.
Yeah.
Now, Andrew Garfield is in that movie.
Yes, he is.
What part does he play in that movie? Because I have never seen it.
He plays Eduardo Saverin, who is friends with Mark Zuckerberg, and Mark Zuckerberg asks him to become the CFO of Facebook.
Tim, when I come down and you and I watch Troll 2, I'll also bring Social Network with me.
I don't know. I don't know.
You're going to watch it, and you're going to like it. Otherwise, you can't talk to me.
We have a working relationship, Kelly. I have to talk to you every week.
He's going to be too busy watching the Mystery Men Director's Cut.
You better believe it. The Shoveler? Genius.
Don't get started. Tim, I'm sorry, Kelly.
go ahead. Baby Bowler. There you go. Go on.
Okay. Just everything about this movie is just amazing and heartbreaking, and it's just such a well-made film. I really just can't say enough good things about it.
And it really connected with you that much.
Yeah, I've seen it like 15 times. Like, I have long discussions with people Tumblr about it. I made so many friends because of this movie.
Honestly, the only part of the film I've ever seen is that mime that they put up on that people would put up on their Facebook pages, where the Zuckerberg character is looking at the piece of paper and it says something clever, and then he looks up and he looks to see who said it.
What?
Yeah.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Are you sure you're not talking about the you dick part?
No.
Or this podcast just went in a really strange direction.
No, on the piece of paper, a girl passed dick.
Yes.
I think Tim's confusing something with something else.
Confusing it with the memes that people pass with it.
I thought, that has nothing to do with the film.
That's all I've ever seen from the film is that little thing, and I find that funny.
Well, now you know it actually says you dick on that piece of paper.
Well, there you go. Spoiler alert, ladies and gentlemen. Okay.
I could quote the whole movie to you, right now.
All right, well, let's hop to my list for a second.
I really want to hear this.
I want to throw out one caveat for your list.
Go ahead.
If Mystery Men is on there, don't talk about it.
Mystery Men is not on my list.
Okay, thank God.
It should, though, but it's not. Now, Tom, when you brought this idea to my attention, I had immediately thought of comic books. And so that's what my list comprised of to start.
Yeah.
But as the day went on today, I started really thinking about that. And Jason and I had the conversation on the phone earlier about the real meaning behind what you were trying to say with this. So I came up with some other things, and I thought about it a little more. And as we've been doing this podcast, I've been revising my list, and I've come up with
Did you get it laminated?
No, but I will after this, though. But this is what I've come up with. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, I have 5. And these are the ones that have stuck with me the most. And I'll start with Kraven's Last Hunt, the Spider-Man storyline that spans Amazing Spider-Man Spectacular and Web of Spider-Man. What If number 24, that is What If Wolverine Became the Lord of the Vampires.
That's specific.
Well, there's a reason for that, though. Uncanny X-Men Annual number 11. The reason why that is on there is because that was the first comic book I ever read. And I still remember where I was, what I was doing to this day. Then I dive into novels, and I go with Ender's Game.
Ooh.
And finally, my number 5 is Maximum Overdrive, the film. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit about each of them, but I'm going to start with Kraven's Last Hunt. Now, the reason why this stuck with me so much, a year ago, I lost my brother. Okay, he committed suicide. But when I read Kraven's Last Hunt, I mean, that story stuck with me so much because of what Kraven was going through. It wasn't so much about what Spider-Man went through in that story as it was what Kraven was going through, because through the whole time that Kraven and Spider-Man had been doing their things and battling each other, Kraven could never best him. Kraven could never beat him. And in Kraven's mind, that was an atrocity. And at the end, in this storyline, Kraven's last hunt, he was finally able to do that. And then at the end, if nobody's ever read it, I'm going to spoil it for you. At the end, he sticks a shotgun in his mouth and he kills himself.
Yeah, no, I've read it.
I mean, that resonated with me so hard because...
Tim, let me ask you a question. Did you read it for your initial read? Was it before or after your brother?
It was after.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
And that's why it stuck with me. I mean, like, I'd been trying to wrap my brain around why my brother did what he did and what he went through, sure, and things like that. But as part of my healing process, I read this. And that kind of helped me not rationalize it, but realize it a little more.
It's so interesting, you know, Timmy, and of course it's terribly tragic. As an English teacher, working with students and high school students and junior high students, you know, you never know, and really that's kind of the point of this conversation, the whole conversation too, you never know, and I think you'll find it's tough to explain sometimes why certain things stick with you the way that they do.
That's because, very true.
You know, you're really just, you're dealing with stuff on a very, when you're talking about stories that affect you the level that I'm trying to get across, you're really dealing with things on a personal, emotional level to some extent, and maybe stuff you don't even identify. And this is certainly, you know, you never know how someone's going to react to a story, and that's something that comes, stories like yours, you come up so often in a classroom setting. I've approached them so many times where they're talking about death of a parent, death of
right.
You know, it's really, oh, you never even imagined that the story could affect that person in that way because you don't know what it's like to walk in that person's shoes, you know?
I'm going to probably pronounce his name wrong, but it's David Michelinie.
I think that's right.
Yeah. His writing for Kraven's Last Hunt was bar none some of the best writing I had ever read. I mean, it just the way that he turned Kraven from simplicity to complex in the flip of a page. I mean, it was just so staggering how well it was done. And in light of recent events, you know, and the tragedy that was my brother, that story...
Yeah.
Has and still is, you know, a significant part of what I have to go through in my healing process. But with that, I'm going to take it to a little bit of a better note. Ender's Game, how that stuck with me. It's not so much the story itself, but how I was told to read it. And Jason, I told this to you earlier today, but I will never forget the day that I read Ender's Game. I was living with a friend of mine. His name was Matt. And I was living in Big Rapids, Michigan, and I was playing a video game. I was playing Gran Turismo. And he told me to turn it off. He said, turn the game off. And I said, why? And he said, because I got something for you. And I shut the game off, and he shows me this tattered, worthless copy of a book. I mean, there was no front cover, there was no back cover, the beginning pages were gone. It started at chapter one. And I didn't even know what I was reading. He said, here, read this. When you're done, we'll talk about it. And I said, okay, what is it? And he said, just read it. I read that book in 3 days. And he sat there and watched me finish the last couple pages of that book. And we sat there and talked all night about Ender's Game.
3 days without stopping?
Well, I slept in the bathroom and ate. Played a little Gran Turismo in between. But 3 days it took me to read that book.
Yeah, I've never read Ender's Game. It's been on my pile of things to read for like 3 years.
You need to put it on the top of your pile. That book is fantastic. You would never think that a bunch of 5-year-olds could plot the course of the world.
I actually would believe that.
Well, the way Orson Scott Card wrote that book, it's mind-blowing. Kelly or Jason, have you guys ever read that?
No.
The only
thing I've ever read from Orson Scott Card was when he did Ultimate Iron Man.
You need
to. I know they're making a movie.
You guys need to read that book. You need to read it. Okay, so Tom, let's take another one from your list.
Oh, okay. You know, as we were talking here, I just realized I probably have two more alternates to add to my list.
Okay.
One of them is a very geek standard, which is Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Most death.
The other one I'll be stoned to death for is Friends.
Friends?
Oh, yeah. Friends.
I can hear the nerds and the geeks behind me now gathering their stones.
Mystery Men, dude. Mystery Men.
Oh, really?
Hey, Mystery Men was good. I will still hide that.
I've seen every episode. And my wife and I have seen every episode of Friends probably like 3 or 4 times a piece. It's easy because it's in syndication now. But
it was based in New York is why it stuck with you so much?
I don't know. I just think it's fantastic. Some of the reasons I love Harry Potter are the same reason I think I love Friends. It's fantastic ensemble storytelling, which isn't Harry Potter so much. But the sense of history that they weave through the 10 seasons where, you know, once you get to the latter seasons, they make in-jokes and references back that you instantly recognize and get, and you recognize them as the sort of in-jokes that Friends actually make. And you're talking about 6 actors giving the performance of their careers.
See, that's something that I like about shows is that when they reference previous episodes, Buffy the Vampire Slayer was huge on doing that, like her obsession with cheese after she had been turned into a rat, you know, that stuck with her the rest of the series, and they mention that constantly. But go on with Friends.
I think this kind of Friends was sort of charted in a strange way the relationship between my wife and myself.
Mm-hmm.
And it was sort of the constant as we grew from friends to a couple into a married life.
Okay.
And it became like almost a bonding point or a reference point for the two of us. And that's, I think, one of the reasons why it stuck with me as it has.
Okay, right on. Fair enough. Kelly, let's take one more from your list.
I think I want to talk about A Separate Piece. I don't know if you guys have read the book A Separate Piece. I didn't have to read it in school, but I read it on my own.
Okay.
And it was just a really, really great book about these boys at an academy during World War II, and they're not quite old enough to go to war, but they end up having to, like, basically fight their own personal, like, inner battles.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a really beautifully written book, and, like, I wrote an essay about it in my junior year in high school. And it just really made me think about it, and so the story's really stuck with me.
Why is it stuck with you, though? Is it because of what the kids had to go through?
Yeah, it was really sad. I don't want to give it away. If you haven't read it, it gives it away.
What's the name of the book again?
A Separate Piece.
A Separate Piece.
Yeah. And, I mean, like, basically, like, This kid, Gene, he has to, like, sort of fight his inner battle, like, the sort of rage he has inside of him and jealousy.
See,
of, like, someone who's his best friend.
Now I'm going to look for this on my Kindle, see if I can find it on there.
Hello.
Jason, one more from your list.
I'm going to have to add another one, partly because I don't want to talk about the prequel trilogy because that's something for a longer podcast, and that's something where I would dominate the conversation. Lost. Yeah. I've told Tom before that Lost is such a great show. I like him, never watched it when it came on. I was able to watch it straight through when I got all of the Blu-rays. And it actually comes in this half pyramid with all kinds of different little goodies from the show.
I personally think that J.J. Abrams is today's Spielberg. I think that his mind is that creative, like with his idea with Cloverfield and Super 8.
I'm pretty sure Spielberg is still working.
Well, yeah, but he's going to retire soon, someday, you know. But J.J. Abrams, he's young, he's fresh, he's very creative. Yeah, his take on Star Trek really, really hit home for me. I thought he did a really good job with that. But
it was great, yeah. And it's just about Lost, you know, one of the things, a lot of people complain, say, about the ending to Lost, but it's like I wrote in the column about it. By the time I reached the ending, I almost didn't care what the ending was. Like, I had just gotten so much entertainment out of the show that I would have felt guilty complaining about the last 10 minutes of it.
Yeah, I mean,
mind the ending either. So,
in the whole scope of the show, like the ending doesn't matter so much as what happened, you know, in seasons 2, 3, and 4. Once you get to 5 and 6, then what happens there really doesn't seem to count as much, at least not for me, as the earlier seasons, because the earlier seasons are just so well written, so well acted, so well done, that those first 3 seasons I can't find fault with. There is no fault to be found there.
See, I've got it in my queue, but I just haven't found the time to sit down and watch it yet.
You should.
Do yourself a favor and watch it, all of it.
Okay, well, I'm going to give you guys one more off of my list, and then we're coming to the end of the program. But the other one on my list that really, really stuck with me, I talked about Kraven's Last Hunt. I talked about Ender's Game. I'm going to have to go with Maximum Overdrive. Have any of you ever seen that movie?
I don't know if I've heard of it.
Okay. I think you're the only person that's ever seen that, Sam.
Kelly, have you seen Maximum Overdrive?
No, I have not.
Okay. What Maximum Overdrive is it's based off of a short story that Stephen King wrote called Trucks. And the whole premise of this movie is one day the Earth passes through this rogue comet called Rhea M or something like that. But the point is that anything with a motor comes alive and starts to systematically murder anybody that gets within wheels reach of it, so to speak. It's a cheesy movie. It's a B-list movie. It has Emilio Estevez, the Mighty Duck Man, as the main character. That's right. But it resonates with me so much because of how old I was when I watched it. It was when my mom had remarried again. She remarried a guy named Steve, who is and always will be my stepdad. But he sat me down and my brothers down and put this movie in. I mean, it was on a shoddy video cassette that had the lines running through it half the time. But all I remember was being in awe of this film and watching this truck that said Happy Toys on it with the Green Goblin's face on the front of the semi, just running around mowing people down. I mean, to this day, when I'm on the interstate driving or anywhere driving and I look in my rearview mirror and see a semi behind me, the first thing that pops in my mind is it going to run me down?
See, I'm sure since it's written by Stephen King, it's probably very well written. But when you describe the plot that way, it's just like he was grasping at straws, or he was just like pulling out what was at the bottom of the barrel.
Not at all. If you read the short story Trucks, it's so fantastic because it starts right in the middle of this. Like in the short story, this event takes place and then it doesn't stop.
Is the short story better than the film?
Yeah, obviously. Okay.
It sounds like it should be a sci-fi original movie.
It sounds
like the truck should be fighting like Mega Snake.
It was actually on sci-fi. Sci-fi redid it as Trucks, but it was terrible.
It actually sounds like there's Decepticons that don't change form.
No.
This guy's Hellbull as opposed to the Emilio Estevez classic.
Totally. Look at this. This movie, you have to watch this movie. This is your homework.
No, I don't think that I do.
It's so amazing. It's a great movie. I had to find this on DVD on Amazon. It took me forever to find it. I own a copy of it.
There's a reason for that.
It's an underrated film.
I'm still cracking up. About the Emilio Estevez classic line.
It's as good, if not better, than Mystery Men.
So you got the Laserdisc then?
No, I wish.
The Betamax?
I wish. I have it on regular DVD. Thank you.
Oh, it's not even on Netflix.
No,
You couldn't get it on HD DVD? I mean, you know, some other dead format?
I don't think it's gone Blu-ray yet.
A dead format?
Even on, like, DVD available on Netflix, so.
If it's dead format, then it must be on the Zune, right?
Yeah, right? It's good. You have to watch it. It's fantastic. You get to watch a lawnmower chase after a kid on a bike, and the ice cream truck is memorable. Everything about that movie is.
I don't think we can watch it.
Can I just say it was nominated for 2 Razzie Awards?
There you go.
Nice.
There you go.
Actually, Tim, from you describing the film, I feel like I have watched it, so I'm good on not looking it up.
Oh, you know, I did see it, but it was on Mystery Science Theater.
Oh my god.
Oh, I'll have to look that up because I'm sure that's on Netflix.
Did they actually sit through that?
I don't know. They must. I hope they did.
It's
a golden opportunity.
It's such a good movie, guys. I can't say enough about it.
$10 on Amazon. I don't think so. That's too much.
Please don't say any more about it.
Unless they're sending me the $10. With the movie.
The VHS is more expensive.
I am putting out an open statement to anybody listening to this podcast. Please join me in the fight to get Tom, Kelly, and Jason to watch this movie.
I'll watch it if I can watch it for free.
I will send you my DVD.
And make sure when you get it, you burn it.
No, don't burn it. It's the only copy I have.
I bet I could find it online.
Exists.
It does exist on Amazon, but it's $10. That's way too expensive.
Tim's trying to sell it. Take a profit.
Quick, no. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time. Before I go, though, I want to say thank you to Tom, Kelly, to Jason. You guys are fantastic as always. I want to say thank you to Matt, our producer. He makes sure that this podcast is in a beautiful presentation form for you, the listener, and make sure that we have all the cool added features that go along with this. Once again, thanks a lot to Two Guns 365 for
Tim, can I make a request?
Sure.
Can we end this jumbo-sized podcast with the Benny Hill music?
I think that's copyrighted, Tom, and we'd get in trouble.
Oh, all right, well, maybe we can hum it later.
Two Guns 365, thank you very much for answering the trivia question. I hope you enjoy your 1,000 free points and that digital download of Avenging Spider-Man number 6. Ladies and gentlemen, we are out of here. Thank you.
1, 2, 3. StashMyComics.com is the leading free online interactive comic book database. Catalog your comics and track prices, character, and creator appearances. Follow the daily blog reviews, editorials, and a weekly podcast. Connect with other fans through member reviews and discussion forums. Keep abreast of site updates on Twitter at StashMyComics and find us on Facebook. StashMyComics.com, powered by Geek Energy.
Nailed it.